It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, January 21st, 2020, and you know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 124 of Two Nerds in a Pod. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I've got my comrade in gaming commentary here with me, the miggity, 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 miggity Mac, also known as Maxion. Mac, what's good, man? How you been?
I've been very well, Mr. Nice Guy. It's been a great week. Lots of cool things, lots of fun things to be hopeful about. Mrs. the Mac has had a really good time of some of the various job interviews and job offers as well that she's received. I'm going to, you know, I mean, nothing's set in stone, so I'm just going to say that things are going well. I myself have a prospective job that I'm looking into, so I feel like things are certainly looking up. Some corners have been turned, which is nice.
That's awesome. Now, you know, jobs are awesome, but speaking of nerdy stuff, we had a fun time Saturday, right?
Yes, we did. We finally made it happen again.
For those who don't know what he's talking about, we do a community Dungeons & Dragons game here on Twitch, on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod. And it had been a few weeks. We play with some good friends of ours, Ralph and... Oh, I forgot to tag Ralph in the tweet. I just realized. Anyway, Ralph and Pazzy, who are in Europe. And that makes it a challenge simply because different time zones, right? Different countries. But we were able to get our second session in, and it was a lot of fun. Mac is our DM, Dungeon Master.
And
he killed it, man.
You guys as players constantly undermining my plans, but that's
constantly
just what D&D is.
You. It's funny because, like, I knocked that guy out. There's this bad guy who I knocked out in the game. And I was like, now, can I carry his body just to make sure he doesn't go anywhere? And you were kind of like, you can if you really want to.
Mm-hmm.
Hint, hint.
Well, no,
don't do it because I have no idea how this will affect the storyline.
No, it's just one of the advantages of D&D over video games is that you've got more versatility.
Yeah, choose your own adventure type of style. Well, cool, man. Mac, my week was really good too. And I don't usually talk specifically about shows that I'm going to do as a stand-up comedian unless they are big shows. And I have a big one coming up, Mac. I'm going to be headlining a new comedy club in Milwaukee called The Laughing Tap. It is owned and run by some really good people who also do the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. And they're just good people, good guys and girls, who I'm excited to do a show at their club. So just if anyone who watches or listens lives in the Milwaukee area, those shows are going to be February 28th and 29th at 8 p.m. both nights. And tickets are around $15. So nothing crazy. Buy your tickets now and come and hang out. Now, one of the cool things, Mac, is they asked me for a bio. And one of the things that's part of my bio is this podcast. So when you see the posters of the show, there's actually an image of our podcast artwork on the thing. And then also some other festivals and things that I've done are on there. So it's pretty dope.
Podcast artwork that was designed by the 3-2.
Very talented artist. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the 3-2. But anyway, Mac, I just thought I'd share that. And,
that's cool. Are you going
know.
To get any posters of that?
You know, I don't know. And I actually may ask them when I get there and say, hey, can I have one of those? If they're up in the windows or anything, I may ask that at
yes,
the end of the weekend.
Absolutely. I would like one. If they give you more than one, I would love to have one. But if not, I say just one for you.
Yeah, for sure. You know what's funny about this whole thing? I've been doing comedy 11 years, and I was thinking back today to my first year doing stand-up, and I opened for this comedian. I won't say his name because it's not important, but he's a veteran who many of you would have heard of if I was to say his name. And at the time, I asked him, I was like a year into comedy, and I said, hey, man, I want to be a headliner, man. What do I got to do to get to the point where I'm headlining clubs? And in retrospect, he was way more nice to me for asking that stupid question 1 year into comedy than he needed to be. Because it's basically like a kindergartner going up to Kobe Bryant and saying, hey, man, I play basketball. I just started playing. What do I got to do to get to the NBA and be a 5-time champion like you? You know, in that situation, they just kind of laugh inside and say, well, keep getting good at this because you're nowhere near where you need to be. Anyway, now we're 11 years later and I'm actually headlining a club. And I've headlined other clubs before for the past couple years, right? But point is, these things take time, man, and it's cool to finally be there.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd share that with the people. Anything else you want to tell the boys and girls before we hop into the stuff we do?
Honestly, I'm so excited for the stuff we're going to be doing today specifically that I am that I just can't think of anything else to say. It's just like, I just want to get to what we're doing.
Well then, Mac, I say we do what we do best and hop right into the video game discussion, man. What do you think about that?
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode number 124 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest gaming podcast in the galaxy. We got a lot of great news for y'all today. Some stuff that excites me, some stuff that excites Mac. Let's dive right in. This first news story comes from the good people at IGN.com, and it's written by Matt Kim. Mac, this one's right up your alley. It says, every Half-Life game is going free to play for a limited time in anticipation of the release of Half-Life Alyx. Users can go to Steam right now and install Half-Life, Half-Life 2, and Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and 2 to catch up on the series so far. Steam users received a notification earlier announcing the Half-Life promotion, but the notification appeared to have gone out too early because it soon disappeared. But Valve made the announcement official today in a new blog post. Quote, Half-Life Alyx is coming in March, and we are celebrating early by making all the games in the Half-Life collection free to play for Steam users from now until the day it launches. Valve's blog post indicates that the Half-Life collection will only be free to play for a limited time. We already read that. And it goes on to say, Mac, Half-Life Alyx is set before the events of Half-Life 2 and stars Alyx Vance, the main character in Half-Life 2, and its episodes. So, Mac, we know that Half-Life Alyx is going to be a VR title, virtual reality title, which is not something that's super accessible. So do you think that with Valve making all of these games free, they want everyone to catch up, that eventually Half-Life Alyx is going to come to more standard methods of playing, PC, consoles, etc.?
No, but only because based on the trailers that I've seen for Half-Life Alyx, the VR component of it seems to be so deeply entrenched in the mechanics of the game itself. I think this is less of reason to believe that we're going to get it on other platforms, more reason to believe that they want to really get everybody in a Half-Life mood so that they feel like they have to buy Alyx. I think it's more marketing, less hope for the future, if that makes sense.
That's interesting. Here's my thing. I don't think that many people have VR, right? I just don't think, and I should look up the numbers.
Oh, no, it's true, they don't. But what I'm saying is I think they're trying to push Half-Life Alyx as sort of the killer app, if you will, as the, not quite the launch title, but the must-have game for VR.
Okay, and I'll concede that point, because I could definitely see that. I wonder what they're going to charge for it. It's definitely not going to be free. But here's my thing. I feel like most people who have a VR headset have played Half-Life. I just feel like if someone is into gaming so much that they own a virtual reality headset, that they probably have played that game because it's such an iconic franchise. And it's something that has been around for so long. So maybe they just are saying, hey, refresh. Maybe they're not saying, hey, we know that a lot of you guys who have these headsets have never played the game. Maybe they're just saying, we know you've played it before, but here's a refresher just in case, you know, you don't have your old copy that was on the orange box on Xbox or whatever. Right?
That could be. The two people that I know of who have VR headsets that I know from like IRL interactions that have headsets, VR sets, I know that neither of them have played the Half-Life franchise. So okay, maybe it's just sampling. It could very much be a sample size.
Well,
error.
Let me ask you this. Of those two people, are either of them excited for Half-Life Alyx? Do you know?
That I don't know for sure, but this might be a way to sort of drum up that support. I don't know.
Okay. Well, speaking of other games that are coming to new consoles, or rather being made available on new consoles, let's talk about The Boys and Girls at Telltale. This one comes from GameSpot.com by James O'Connor. It says, Telltale's The Walking Dead is over, but it's still found a way to rise from the dead. I like that. That's good writing right there, Mac. I like that. Rise from the dead like zombies? Very clever, James O'Connor. Very clever indeed. Following the collapse of Telltale Games, their full catalog disappeared from Steam, and when the final season of The Walking Dead eventually wrapped up, it was an Epic Store exclusive on the PC. Meanwhile, on Switch, the first and fourth seasons were available to buy, but seasons 2 and 3 were not. So, effectively, Mac, you could play Season 1 and Season 4 on the Switch, you could not play Seasons 2 and 3, which to me makes zero sense.
And if you hadn't already purchased the games, they effectively disappeared for forever? Question mark?
Forever.
Which I would say it's certainly, if you wanted to make an argument for video games as art, a lot of the work that Telltale Games had done is very much a good argument for video games as art. So it's a shame to see art disappear forever.
But wait, there's more. It says, now all of that is changing. Skybound Games, the studio now in charge of the Walking Dead IP, has announced that the games are returning to Steam on January 22nd.
Which games? How many?
All of the Walking Dead games.
And what about the Tales from the Borderlands? How about
Let's keep reading. Let's keep reading and see what it says, Mr. Maction, Mr. Impatient. Let's read and see what they have to say. It says, and the Seasons 2 and 3 are finally available on the Switch, which is big news to me. And here's the tweet. It says, The Walking Dead fans, two good pieces of news for this Tuesday. Seasons 2 and 3 are on the Nintendo Switch on the eShop. Play all four seasons on the go. All four seasons will be back on Steam tomorrow. And then it goes on to say, the seasons on Switch will retail for $15 each. It's now possible to play through the entire Telltale Games Walking Dead saga on the handheld console, minus the Mechion spinoff, which has not been announced. You'll be able to do the same on Steam, blah, 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 we read that. It says, Telltale Games itself has been reborn and has started work on The Wolf Among Us 2. The first Wolf Among Us game is available on Steam 2. To answer your question, Mac. So, I know you've played some Telltale games. Have you played all of The Walking Dead?
No, I've played none of The Walking Dead. I've seen episodes 1 and 2 of The Walking Dead played. I've also seen the Back to the Future one, some of The Wolf Among Us, and I myself have played the Tales from the Borderlands.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, I'm looking in the chat to try and see... What up, Mega Gamer? Mega Gamer's here today. We got Mega Gamer. We got Pazzy. We got Moocher. We got Ishmobile. We got Spenis. We got other people. It's good to see all you here. Thank you so much for being here for the live show. So, Mac, you've never played The Walking Dead. I'm going to tell you right now. I played the first season on Xbox 360 back in the day, and I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it was a great, great game. I thought that it was immersive. It's cel-shaded graphics, but I thought that the storytelling was really good. I thought that you were forced to make tough choices. I like games where, let me say this in a way that makes sense. I like games where characters die. Not because I like death and dying, but because I like the sense of permanence that comes from your decision in video games. Do you agree with that, or are you not like that?
No, I agree with that.
Okay, cool. So, and I haven't played The Wolf Among Us, but have you played that one? It seems like you have, because you were kind of hoping that it would come back to Steam.
No, I've seen The Wolf Among Us played. I haven't played The Wolf Among Us, but I just, you know, I'm a big fan of games of art that is made continuing to be enjoyable.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. Well, bottom line, if you guys or girls are on the Switch... this is exciting news, and I only played Season 1, so I'm excited to maybe play Seasons 2, 3, and 4 on the Switch and go back and play Season 1 again. So, anyway, cool news from Telltale. Glad to see them rising from the dead, as James O'Connor said. Now let's talk about... game delays, Mac. Let's talk about game delays. Because that's something that really hit hard this past week. In gaming news. This one's from GameRant.com by Bryn Gerbault. It says, video game delays seem to be as common as the setting sun. A lot of this is due to crunch culture, which has been prevalent in the industry for years, but is only now starting to get proper media coverage. Games are difficult to make and take a long time even under good management, but developers are being overworked but developers being overworked often just makes development take longer. Yet sometimes it's as simple as publishers wanting to move their title out of the way of a big competitor that will surely eat their lunch. So Mac, here's the games that have been delayed. And the question that I have for you is, do you think that game delays contribute to crunch or decrease the amount of crunch time? Because I've read articles about both this week. So here's the games for those of you that are interested. Cyberpunk 2077, a game that many of you guys I know were looking forward to, myself included, was just delayed to September 17th of 2020. It was supposed to come out in April. Final Fantasy VII Remake was delayed from March to April 10th. And it says they're just making that decision to give a couple extra weeks to add some polish. Marvel's Avengers was supposed to come out May 2020. It's now delayed to September 4th. I know some of us were looking forward to that. I think Spenis was. Iron Man VR delayed from February to May 15th. And it's a significant delay because it made sense. But it says it made sense for Marvel because it's a PSVR exclusive and it's now going to come out in the spring. So, and then Dying Light 2, I believe, was delayed indefinitely. And they don't really have a date for that. So, Mac, what do you think, man? If you're working on a game and the developer says, hey, we're going to delay this, do you think that adds more crunch or less crunch?
So you would think that that would decrease the amount of crunch, but I have heard people from the games industry say that that either doesn't decrease crunch or that it actually just kind of delays crunch and makes, and it still happens, it just happens a little bit later than it otherwise would. And I've even seen a few articles about that, but the problem is I just don't know. I feel like crunch is a, you know, crunch is a, I feel like it's a cultural thing that's brought on by people at the top of a game organization, the sort of timetables and the edicts that they set. So that's just my fancy way of saying I don't know.
No, that's a great answer. And, you know, Mac, one of the things that makes this podcast great, I feel, is that we are interactive with our viewers. And we have some really good comments here.
I'm not interactive with our viewers.
We are. We are. Do you want to get interactive?
Yes.
Do you want to get interactive right now? Get interactive, Mac, with these good people here with us.
Pazzi brings up a delightful point. He says, it has to depend on the company's situation, but I have to imagine that if a game developer is having issues releasing a title by a certain date, then those issues don't disappear just because the release date's moved back. You're already in crunch and the game is unfinished. Time to keep crunching so we don't slip again. That's fair.
Interesting perspective.
Mm-hmm. Moocher, however, says, I think the biggest difference is that nowadays, with the internet and other media, it's way more transparent to the consumer. Back in the day, do you think that anyone would know about an Indiana Jones delay? Yeah. I mean, I feel like how much of these unfortunate situation that is crunch is a result of, you know, we're talking about it just because we can see it now, because we can peer behind the curtain.
I think you're 100% right. So who did you read? You read Posse's comment, you read Moocher's. Ish said delay could just drag crunch out. That's true. And so, Mac, there's a quote from someone. I think it was from Miyamoto of Nintendo.
That a delayed game is at some point in time perfect, but a rushed game is forever bad.
Yeah, he may not have said perfect, but that's effectively what he said. Yeah, you're exactly right. And so I think that's what they're trying to avoid. They're saying, hey, if this game can be good with a few more months, let's make people wait. And then when it comes out, they'll enjoy it. Now, the reality is they're going to all come out around the same time, and it's going to make people have to really pick and choose. Although it looks like a lot of these games were delayed with similar release dates or close by release dates. And now they're being pushed to a similar time. Now, this does get them out of the way of things like The Last of Us and whatnot. But come Game of the Year time, I think that people are really not going to have time to play all of these potentially great games. And they may not be remembered as Game of the Year candidates. And they may not sell as well. Just because a lot of consumers, you know, maybe they buy, you know, 2, 3, 5 games a year. They're not going to buy 5 games all at once that come out in the same quarter. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. Mac, any last comments on that before we continue?
Yeah, Mujer does point out, and something we should know very well from all of our talk about Kickstarters every week, is that anyone who's supported a Kickstarter has been front row seats to behind the scenes production and, you know, delays that come about as, you know, things like that.
100% right. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. Two more news stories today, guys, and then we'll keep it moving. This next one is a selfish one, Mac, that I just wanted to share. Because it excited me. It excited me. This is from IGN.com. This is by Chris Priestman. It says, the creative director of the latest two Splinter Cell games has returned to Ubisoft after leaving the company in 2019. VGC reports that Maxime Belland is one of the people who will make up Ubisoft's newly expanded and restructured editorial team that oversees creative decisions on all its games. Belland started as a game tester for Ubisoft back in 1998. He worked there for the next 20 years, servicing as creative director for On Rainbow Six Vegas, game design director on Assassin's Creed, and creative director for Splinter Cell Conviction and Splinter Cell Blacklist. Now, just for reference, for those of you who may not know, Splinter Cell Conviction and Blacklist, the two most recent Splinter Cell games. It says, before he left Ubisoft in February 2019 to become a creative director at Epic Games, Belland provided creative direction on Far Cry 4, Far Cry Primal, and Far Cry 5. So, bottom line, Mac, he's back. He's back, the creative director. And we haven't seen a new Splinter Cell game since 2013. I'm hyped for this. I hope it means we're going to get one within the next couple years. That's the only reason I wanted to read that article, man.
Hey, it's fine by me.
I appreciate that, brother. Well, the last one that we have is about the Xbox streaming service by Eddie Mackick. And I want to get people's opinions in the chat. What do you guys think about Project xCloud, the streaming service from Xbox? You think it's something that's viable or something that will die quickly? It says, Microsoft's game streaming service, which is currently called Project xCloud, has introduced even more games. New to the library today are titles like Destiny 2 and Halo the Master Chief Collection, as well as the racing game Forza Motorsport 7 and the strategy title Civilization 6. You can see the full list below. Black Desert Online, Civ 6, Destiny 2, Forza Motorsport, Halo, like I said, Sparklight, Superhot, The Surge, and Trax. These 9 games join 90-plus titles already available for the Project xCloud trial, which is currently only available in the US, UK, and Korea. Microsoft also confirmed today that the preview is expanding in Korea, with more players now receiving invites. The first public preview for Project xCloud launched in October 2019, and it allows players to stream Xbox games from the cloud to their mobile device over Wi-Fi or mobile network without the need to own an Xbox. Mac, this is for you. This service is for people like you who don't own an Xbox, have no desire to, but want to get into Halo. And here's the thing. It's not available on iPhone. It is available on Android. So if you have a controller and Project xCloud, you could be gaming, man. You could be playing Halo. You could be doing all that good stuff.
While I do see the appeal, in general, I have to once again sound the warning and say streaming services for games need to die a quick and permanent death, because for whatever benefits they might possess, their biggest downfall and detriment is that once there are any exclusive games released for a streaming-only platform, that game will die and never return again just as soon as the streaming platform closes down for whatever or any reason. Do not support streaming platforms because of the incredible risk that they present for game ownership, okay?
Mac's a hater, man. Mac is a hater, dude.
I am a hater. I will go to my grave trying to scream from the mountaintops about how we need to prevent that.
Listen. If you don't own an Xbox anyway, this is just letting you play it, dude. It's letting you play those games on your Android since you hate the iPhone. Should we just take a minute and list all the stuff that Mac hates, man?
No, and I mean whoop-de-doo for the, for being able to play it on my Android phone. That is cool, but The problem is, I feel like this is how they get us. This is how they will get people, oh, look, it's innocuous. You can do this. It'll be fine. And the next thing you know, you're selling your body for another month worth of subscription to the xCloud.
Dude, you make it sound like Microsoft is strangers with candy trying to get you to go into their van.
They're all strangers with candy trying to get you into their van. That's all they are, and that's all they want.
Well, in the sake of time, because we have a lot of awesome stuff today, I see all your comments, Moocher, Pazzy, saying that you think that it will work.
Yes, Okami. Yep, it's gaming as a service instead of gaming as a good. Games are goods, not services. Rise up, brothers.
Mac's going to start the gaming rebellion. That has been our news for the week. Mac, over to you, buddy.
All right. Well, let's take a look into the past with some gaming history. Now, back in 1998, it was this last week that we saw the release of Resident Evil 2. So as a little bit deeper of a dive than I normally take, I want to talk about some of the things about the game in development. They started production on Resident Evil 2 about a month after Resident Evil 1 was finished, with about half of the staff from the first game. There were earlier builds of Resident Evil 2, which these days we now call them Resident Evil 1.5, because at this point in time along development, there was this point where they basically revamped the whole game. And you can even find several copies of Resident Evil 1.5 because the game was about 70% complete. So you can play the majority of the way through a almost Resident Evil 2 title that maybe you haven't seen before. And part of that was because of a big change of story and tone. For example, in Resident Evil 1.5, not only had Umbrella been shut down, but the end of the game for Resident Evil 1.5 didn't really leave the door open for more for sequels or anything like that. And that was one of the big changes that they made, that the, you know, corporate people said. They're like, we want this to be a franchise, and we want to be able to make more games, and we can't do that if you conclude the stories so well. We want to have games all over the world in different sorts of things, which of course we would see later on down the road. But that was one of the reasons why they brought Resident Evil back to square one on development, and they made Resident Evil 2 with a lot of new assets and basically kind of new everything. So there's a little bit something new you might not have known. However, as far as I am aware, Resident Evil 2 is one of the first games, at least on the PlayStation, at least, to use adaptive music. Now, it was rather simplistic, but the adaptive music I'm talking about was the way in which the music didn't just play, play while you were all going through an area and keep on playing and change based on the area you moved to, but changed based on the conditions of the game. So, for example, when you entered an area and there was silence, that was part of the adaptive music. The music adapted to the fact that there were enemies. And then when you finished killing the enemies, the music began playing again, something that I took much advantage of when I was playing through Resident Evil 2. But I'll never forget walking home from my brother-in-law and sister's house when I was a young warthog. This must have been in 98 or so, probably late 1998.
When I was a young warthog.
When he was a young warthog. Don't come after us, Disney. Then I played Resident Evil 2 with my brother-in-law, and then I had to walk home 10 o'clock at night in the dark. I was terrified, and it was years before I finally beat Resident Evil 2 and overcame my fears. But Resident Evil 2 holds a special place in my heart. And hopefully, if it didn't hold a special place in your heart already, you at least know a little bit more about some of the history behind Resident Evil 2. Mr. Nice Guy, back over to you.
Now, people are saying we're going to get sued for that Disney reference we just did.
Was it really
a Disney reference, or was it was it just something that's actually under fair use that we just happened to say on the stream?
I don't think Disney cares whether or not it's fair use. I don't think most people care whether or not it's fair use, except for the people on the opposite side of the copyright gun that's being pointed at them, frankly.
Let's move on. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for our next segment, a segment we like to call the topic of the week. where we talk about something that's relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. The chat is popping today. We appreciate all of your opinions and all the stuff you guys are saying, by the way. Thank you so much for being here. This week's topic of the week is something kind of unique, and it's something I thought was really cool and tied in with a recent conversation that we had about pursuing gaming as a career. And this one comes from Polygon.com by Owen S. Good. And Mac, I want to get your opinion on this, man. It says, the Entertainment Software Association is now offering sports scholarships. Esports scholarships. The ESA, the trade organization representing the United States video game publishers, announced on Thursday that it is expanding its 20-year-old scholarship program to include esports competitors in college. The ESA Foundation's esports scholarship is intended to elevate the participation of women and minorities, who account for a very small percentage of recipients of the esports scholarships awarded by other organizations. The ESA Foundation's overall goal is to advance opportunities for women and minorities in college and their pathways into the video game industry. Established in 2000, it has raised more than $23 million in the two decades since. I'm not going to read all of the numbers, but it does say this. It says, the ESA Foundation's esports scholarship joins two others the foundation annually awards, the Computer and Video Game Arts Scholarship and a scholarship awarded in conjunction with gay gaming professionals for service to LGBTQ communities. Applications are now open and will close March 2nd, 2020. Mac, what do you think about this, man? Obviously, it's good, right? But what qualifications do you think that they use to determine who gets the scholarship? Like, this is a legitimate question because I had never heard of anything like this before. How do they pick their winners?
I'm honestly not 100% sure. This is the first time I'm hearing about this, but I agree with you. It is definitely good. I like it. I look forward to it. And, you know, I want to know who gets this scholarship. I mean, you know, I would love to hear about people who get this scholarship and go on to do awesome things in esports in college. I think it's fantastic. I care more about this than I do about any sports scholarship. I just hope it goes to good people, but yeah, I mean, what are you asking? Do you want us as a group here to discuss and come up with what we think the appropriate qualifications are?
No, I'm just curious, man. I'm curious what we think, because, I mean, it can't be just GPA, right? Not that gamers don't get good grades, because I think gamers are as smart, if not smarter, than anyone. But I'm just curious what they, like, is it, you know, this person has shown an interest in gaming? Is it they already have a big following? Is it they've already competed in some esports? What is it? Let us know in the chat what you think, too.
Well, Moocher does bring up that, like many scholarships, they're probably going to include an essay and or resume with the application process. And I wonder, in this day and age, do you think that resume would include a portfolio of some of your sickest wins, some of your best Zerg rushing, some of your
360 headshots?
Some 360 no scopes. I mean, you know, all these things. Do you think that's part of what's going to be included? Your resume and portfolio? That would be pretty cool.
Well, it goes back to the conversation we had a couple weeks ago when I said, Mac, how would you react if you had a kid who wanted to pursue gaming full time, right? And I won't rehash that conversation, but this really provides people with an avenue to get there rather than just saying, hey, mom and dad, I want to drop out of school and pursue gaming. This is saying, no, stay in school and pursue gaming and we'll pay for you to get an education, right? And build your portfolio so that you can go into the industry with a degree, right? Mm-hmm. I think this is great.
Yeah, I think so too. And I especially love when I see it's not exactly outside of the box thinking so much as it is being willing to apply the tools of the past to pathways that are more in line with the future, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Now, Moocher, I don't know if you knew this, Mac, but he was telling me, and he's probably told you
before.
Yeah,
he's got that high school esports team, which, we'll sponsor you with as long as you're willing to take, as long as the team is willing to take sponsorships that have absolutely no financial backing behind them.
That's right. We'll shout you guys out each episode. Well, a couple comments in the chat. Ish Mobile says, do they have to do esports after college? Many college athletes never make it. Dude, that is such a good point. He said many of never make it past the college. And that's exactly what I was thinking, Mac. So if someone gets a scholarship, like Ish Mobile just said, and they say, yeah, you know what? I want to go into the games industry. And then they change their mind. Is there any type of penalty? Or I mean, we don't know. It's all hypothetical at this point. But it's very different for a college athlete to say, yeah, I'm going to play sports in college. And then maybe they're just not good enough to get to the pro level, right? As like 95% of them are not. I could see that happening here, right? So I don't know. It's just a matter of the way the cards fall. Now, Spenis says... this is 100% a very good thing for gamers who aspire to go to college, especially as colleges do expand to esports programs. I think that there are some also things that include the process, such as resume, interviews, and other notable pieces, such as letter of recommendation. Y'all are going to have to start proofreading your stuff. Spinus, you're my homie. I love you, dog. But that sentence structure, Spinus, you would not get the esports scholarship.
Spenis, I would let you get the esports scholarship.
Listen, I've known Spenis for like 6 years through Twitch. He's a good friend. He knows I'm just joking. But anyway, Mac, I feel like we've talked a lot about this. It'll be interesting to see what happens. And thank you guys for your comments. Mac, back over to you, buddy. That's been our topic of the week.
Okay, let's turn now to a crowdfunding effort that's trying to get off the ground in this segment that we call Kick or Kickstart, and you have an important role to play. At the end of discussing the virtues and the vices of this Kickstarter, we are going to say as a group whether or not we think this should be kickstarted, because it's worth our money, or it should be kicked out of here. Posting a link in the chat now for those of you who are live with us, so that you can take a look and see what we are seeing alongside us.
Everybody, get ready for a Metroidvania.
Get ready. So, this is called Psycho Nightmare, and the parsing of it's actually in brackets, the name. But there is a little bit of language issues, a touch on this Kickstarter, because it's not a native English speaker. I do believe that it's that we're talking about Puebla, Mexico. So, you know, please forgive any sort of things there. So let me give you a quick rundown. This is a PS1 era horror game. That's the feel that they're going for. They're going for something like Silent Hill. And maybe it's just because I am, you know, just because of who I am and when I became video game, you know, into video games. But I really feel like the PS1 era is when video games started getting, really the horror aspect of video games started getting good. So definitely Silent Hill in that. Now, it is DRM free, the PS1 aesthetic, of course, and it has a playable demo as a part of it. So definitely some good things. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the things I know that are downsides here. Now, this game was attempted once already, and they couldn't get the $9,000 that they were asking for. And now they are asking way too little at only $1,600 for the game in order to get it released. And there's a desktop-only release for this game, which means it'll be PC, and Linux, maybe Mac as well. Now, the plus side is the scope of the game has changed between the two Kickstarters, from what I can tell, in that they're only going for really to make this game of about 2 hours in length, or 2 hours plus. Some other good things about it, $13 buy-in minimum if you want to get the digital game upon release. And I have to say, I love the rewards of this game, right? $26 if you want to get your name on a plaque in the game as being one of the founders of the city. $36 if you want your name to be on a house, as in, welcome to the Gugulukas, or, you know, something like that on one of the houses inside of the town. I love when I see things like that in games. Absolutely love it. Okay, I put it over to you guys. This game, which has not raised too frightfully much, only about $270 of its $1,600 goal, but it still has about 25 days left to go. Go ahead, tear it down.
So, okay, so the reversion to nostalgic games being made again in Super Nintendo style, in Nintendo Entertainment 8-bit style, is back, right? We had The Messenger. We had Celeste. We've had many, many games that use those old school graphics because it gives us a certain feeling and it makes us remember a time of our childhood, right? For many of us, when we grew up and when those games had the sounds and the graphics that were like that. Mm-hmm. You don't see anybody making games in Nintendo 64 style graphics. I have not really seen anyone making new games in PlayStation 1 style graphics. And that's fine if it's your favorite console. That's fine if it brings back certain memories. But Mac, I'll be frank with you, ain't nobody trying to look at that. Ain't nobody trying to look at PlayStation 1 graphics for 5 hours to play a game that was a Kickstarter. And so that alone to me just leads me to believe that these good people are maybe a little bit out of touch with what people want. Because when you're doing something that's a labor of love, you have to find a combination of staying true to yourself, but also doing something that the consumer wants. And to me, the graphics alone on this are a turnoff. And so I guess I just don't understand what they were thinking.
You know, I'm thinking it's someone who loves that aesthetic and it's a labor of love for them, and they can look past the PS1 polygons and they can appreciate it.
And that's perfectly fine, but can they convince thousands of people to do the same?
Well, that's the question. And that's the question that we pose to you. Now, Mr. Nice Guy, I say kickstart. For all of the little things about it that, you know, that are kind of turnoffs, I like it. And I like what they're trying to do, and I appreciate it, and I will risk $13 on this.
I also don't like when Kickstarters have a reward tier that says, just support us because you believe in it. And it's like $6 with no reward. I've never been a fan of that. And that's not something that only these people are doing. A lot of people do that. Now, I like the chat's pretty divided on this.
It's true. It is divided. We've got Pazzy saying, you know, he wonders if they can support the team on the amount of money that they're looking for. And it might very well be that they're really hoping that with the lower Kickstarter goal, it is statistically, if you can get to funded, it's much easier for you to get over funding. It's really hard for you to get, really ramps up in money support for your Kickstarters until you hit that funded. And then in some cases, it's kind of runaway effect. So maybe that's the kinds of thing that they're planning on. But we've got people here who aren't big fans of survival horror, and that's why they say kick, and other people who say that they like it. Moocher's with me on liking the PS1 aesthetic, and he says kickstart. So yeah, it's pretty divided.
Well, House liked the fact that I said ain't nobody got time for that.
It's true. House is absolutely with you on that one.
Now, some people say, I think Moocher just said, I think the old look is good for the whole dark/abandoned look. I'll be honest, and everyone here knows that I respect every member of our community, but I don't get how you guys are seriously excited for a PlayStation 1 game, PlayStation 1 style game. That's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I think some of us are able to look past such superficial things, Mr. Nice Guy, and see the beauty within.
But what beauty is there? How was the playable demo? How was it?
Mr. Nice Guy, you're going to have to try it yourself, man, and tell me what you think.
I can't believe this. Well, I don't know if you've been keeping track of the votes, but I say we vote. You said yours already, right?
Absolutely. I say kickstart.
Mine is obvious. Mine is kick, but I wish him the best.
Yeah, it looks like the majority here, we have kicks over kickstarts, but not by too frightfully much. It's pretty tied up. So, I say kickstart. House is with you. Pazzy's with me. Ishmobile's with you. Traitor. Okami's with you, and we've got Spenis and Moocher with me, so pretty well divided.
Yeah, it's pretty even. Best of luck to them. I feel like I always kind of judge Kickstarters based on how well they're doing already, and this one is struggling a little bit. How many days has it been going?
It's been going for like 4 days, but maybe we could be the match that lights the fire. That's all I'm saying.
All right, so if you're listening, check it out. Let us know what you think. Tweet at us at @2nerdsinapod on Twitter.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for participating in Kick or Kickstart. Back to you.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for our next segment, a segment we like to call Nerdflex. A segment where people send us stuff and they try to stump us. Now, Mac, we have a little bit of a change this week for the Nerdflex segment. Would you mind doing the honors and explaining what we're going to do?
Absolutely. So normally we're being sent trivia things, but we've been sent actually sound clips this time. And what it is Dr. Mutilated. He picked out three sounds for us. And Mrs. the Mac took the recommendations and sent them to Ishmobile. Ishmobile clipped them for us and packaged them up so that we could have them. So thanks to all three of the people in that chain to get these mystery sounds to us. We've got three sounds. Mr. Nice Guy and I are going to listen to them and try and and you guys as well in the chat, feel free to chime in. We're going to try and identify where they're from. And at the end of this Nerdflex segment, I have a special one for you listeners. So, yeah, Mr. Nice Guy, that's it.
Sweet. All right, so I'm going to play these live on stream, and we're going to try to decipher what game these come from, because they're all video game noises, right, Mac?
Yes, I'm given to understand.
Okay, all right, so here is nerd noise number one. Yeah, no, it definitely sounds like old school arcadey.
I actually feel like, I don't know as it's arcadey, but I feel more like it's like Commodore 64 era. Like, I feel like it's a jump noise.
Play it again real quick. Dude, that definitely sounds arcadey to me.
Okay, okay.
What do you guys think in the chat? That doesn't sound arcadey to you?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I think I'm out of my depth here. I don't know. Pazzy thinks like the ZX Spectrum, maybe Jet Set Willy. Moocher's thinking Yar's Revenge from Atari.
Dude, you guys are getting mad specific.
Yeah, but it's
your guesses, which is great.
Spenis, I gotta say, it's definitely not Super Mario Bros. Definitely. I feel like I know that well enough. Tarzan on the Atari? I don't know. I'm going to just take a flyer, and I'm going to say something like Lode Runner, like the jump sound from the Lode Runner. That's all I can think of. Mr. Nice Guy, just throw out your best guess.
So there's a game where you're playing as this mouse, and you go and you jump on these like trampolines. It's called Mappy.
Yeah, Mappy.
And I think, I don't know, for some reason, I think that is it.
Okay, Mappy, that'd be an NES, or, I mean, it also
or,
had
or they
ports
had it for
on a
arcade
lot of different
and
things.
Stuff too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we saw it at Galloping Ghosts, as I recall.
Okay, so we'll stop playing it. Now, do we want to, you have the answers,
absolutely.
I don't have the answers.
I've got the answers. So you say Mappy, I say, now I've even forgotten what I said, but let's see. The answer is, it's from NES Baseball.
What?
It's okay. The sound of a pop fly.
Of a fly ball. Yep,
yep,
that makes sense.
Oh, that does make so much sense. Okay, so things are not looking good for us. You know, we've gotten a little cocky having aced all these nerd flexes for a while. So, okay, the second sound, Mr. Nice Guy?
Okay, so the second sound, let's see. Whoa. Okay. That was kind of intense.
Oh, I know what this sound is.
Let me play it again for the people. What is it, Mac?
Okay, I am almost 100% sure that this is a Ghouls and Ghosts, or a Ghosts and Goblins. I forget which one's which, but I almost for sure, I just feel like that's what's his bucket throwing lances. You know, Arthur throwing lances. It might be Galaga.
Yeah, this is tough. This is a tough segment now.
It's true. We've now gone off the deep end. This is crazy.
I'm enjoying it though.
Yeah, I'm sticking with ghosts and goblins. And Spenis is with me on this one. I feel like that's ghosts and goblins.
Dude, I don't know. That really it does sound. I'm gonna go with Space Invaders.
Okay, Space Invaders. Cool. Let's go ahead and I'll reveal the answer. The answer is Ghosts and Goblins. Arthur throwing his weapon. Yeah. Okay, was good, man. So it was not a, it is not a clean sweep for defeat.
That's
so
awesome.
At least we've got something, so we've still got some nerd cred. All right, but there is one more for us to try and answer.
Okay, so let me check it out. This is more fun. I like it this way, dude. This is this is great. All right, so we got one more sound. Sound number three. Here it is. What the heck?
Yeah.
Okay, play that again.
Wow. So for some reason in my brain, this is sort of like locking in as a FPS. I feel like this just kind of sounds Half-Life-y to me.
Does it really?
Yeah.
That might just be subliminal because we were talking about Half-Life a lot.
It's true. It might be. It might be just that. But maybe it's like, what's that one? Maybe it's like System Shock. System Shock. Yeah, I feel like, now let's see, Moocher's saying a switch in Myst, but I mean, it could be, okay, I'm, just to cover our bases, I'm going to say System Shock, but yeah.
Oh, man, and I straight up have no idea. I don't know why, for some reason, I just lean towards arcade games with all of these. I know this one is probably not. So that little sound at the beginning was almost like something money.
Yeah, it's almost, well, like, I feel like it's you interacting with something.
Like you put a key in and then a door opens or something.
Now, Pazzy says there's a kind of echo on it. Like I'm hearing the fact it's on the other side of the room, which implies something 3D and atmospheric. And that's a very good point. You know, you don't invest that much time in three-dimensional soundscape if you're not also, you know, dealing in three-dimensional movement.
Well, so. I don't know. So I guess we can assume it's not an 8-bit game.
Yeah, I think so.
So here's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to go with Gauntlet Legends.
Gauntlet Legends, okay.
And
okay.
I don't know why, but it sounds something like... It just seems like it could be. I don't even know why, but I'm just going to go with that.
Okay. I'm going to go with the door open sound from System Shock, I feel like.
Okay.
So, let's see. The answer is it's from Portal.
What?
It's from Portal. It's an elevator beep, and I don't remember that from Portal 1 bit.
Here's where I got to make fun of you a little bit, because right now, for those of you who are here live... Mac has some artwork on the wall behind him.
Yeah, that's Aperture. Oh my gosh, I've been played.
An Aperture Science poster behind him.
I've been played.
Didn't know the Portal answer. I didn't know either, though, so who am I to make fun? Dude, that was fun, though, man. I really liked that.
Yeah, well, at least we didn't get clean swept. We did not get clean swept. We are, of course, Mrs. the Mac suggested that one. Of course she did. All right. Well, thank you to Dr. Mutilated, Mrs. the Mac, and Ish Mobile, who made sure that was tough. Spenis, kudos to you on actually, you know, on having that in your head. I do what I must because I can. Well, so now that we've done some flexing of our nerd muscles, it's time for you all. In the first ever Two Nerds in a Pod sound test. The rules are simple. I'm going to play a sound that I've selected from video games. And if you are the first one to correctly identify it, I will send you a Perler made by my own two hands. Tweet your answers to @TwoNerdsInAPod with the hashtag sound test. And here it comes. Good luck to you. You'll need it. So that brings us to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese. There we go.
All right. We're going to do a repeat, kind of. Remember we were talking about CIG versus Crytek, or should I say Crytek versus CIG, last time. And things have gotten a little bit heated. So last time, when we were talking about this, I myself was a bit confused because I remember the suit that Crytek brought against CIG, including them saying that, oh, well, you can't use Amazon Lumberyard to build Star Citizen. You were supposed to be exclusive with us. And I wasn't crazy. I went back and looked at some of that. And yes, in point of fact, that is, you know, that definitely was a part of it. But what I want to focus on right now is the response that that CIG, the makers of Star Citizen, have sent to Crytek in response to their request to dismiss the suit without prejudice. And let me just throw this out there. Keep in mind that in legal terms, dismiss with prejudice means the case is dismissed and you can't bring the case back. Dismiss without prejudice means the case is dismissed and you can bring the case back, especially if you find new evidence or new things that you want to do. And you can do make a stay, which is basically just prolongs thing, but the, you know, but the suit's still active. So as we talked about last time, Crytek tried to have it dismissed without prejudice, and they're like, we'll pick this up later. But here's what CIG's lawyers said in response, and I'm just going to, they said it's ridiculous, but I'm going to read three beautiful quotes from their response. And this is legal documentation. This is the most thinly veiled frustration I've ever heard in a legal document.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it, man. I'm excited.
Quote one, Crytek scrambles for its parachute as the March summary judgment and June trial schedule brought final reckoning ever nearer.
Oh, snap.
That sounds pretty intense. Gets better. Quote two, quote, Crytek should not be allowed to aim its car at CIG's storefront window, stomp on the accelerator, smash through, do donuts for years. Quick aside, remember that this has been ongoing litigation for a few years now. Back to the quote. Donuts for years, then back out and drive away to maybe circle around and crash CIG again another day.
Bring in the heat.
All right, quote number three. Throughout this case, Crytek has sacrificed legal sufficiency for outlandish allegations designed to ignite incendiary publicity. Even as Crytek now hobbles toward the exit, it misleads the court, and in this closely watched case, that also means misleading the public, by falsely claiming that CIG did not switch to Amazon Lumberyard and pretending that new information came out in discovery about the timing of the future release of Squadron 42. Oh, they are not having it. So obviously, they are saying, no, don't let this go. And I have to admit, I'm compelled to agree with CIG. It feels very much like, obviously, this is a ploy from Crytek to try and get out of paying legal fees because they have no effective case against against CIG. And they've just been prolonging this as long as they can until maybe they can find purchase on something. And the walls are closing in and they want to get out without having to pay anything. They want their cake and eat it too, and they can't. And they are going to make sure that they pay, or at least that's what it sounds like. But not very often do you see fun wording like that in legal documentation, but my goodness, that's sometimes a delight when you're reading very boring stuff to just come across delightful tidbits like that.
That's like the lawyer equivalent of a rap battle right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
that's a lawyer's version of a Yo Mama joke. Just bring in the heat. It's wild. It's wild. Well, that was dope, Mac. Anything else to go with that legalese?
No, I mean, we're just going to say I'd be very surprised if they got their dismiss without prejudice. It'll probably be a dismiss with prejudice, or the court will probably take a dim view on having had its time wasted and will go through on this summary, on this thing, and charge them for lawyer's fees. So, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
It's crazy. So yeah, there you go, some legalese for you, and that wraps the main part of the show. But we still like to talk about what nerdy things we are watching and playing and hear from you guys, so come on, let us know, what are you watching, what are you playing?
Yeah, so for, I know we have some new people in here right now, so for those who have not been to the pod, the live show before, welcome first and foremost. Second, we're doing what Mac just said, we're going to talk about the stuff we've been into, and we always want suggestions. So if you're here, you have a job to do, let us know in the chat. The nerdy TV shows, the nerdy YouTube videos, the nerdy video games on mobile, PS4, Xbox, Switch, PC that you've been playing, because we always want nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, do you want to lead off with the stuff you've been watching and playing this week?
I can go for it. I just don't have that much. So as for what I've been playing some Chasm. I've also been playing a little bit of... Chasm's mostly been it. There was another one. There's a game called Chronicles of Teddy. A while back, I played a game called Finding Teddy, and Chronicles of Teddy is the sequel to that game, but it's done in more of a Zelda 2 style, definitely strong Zelda 2 influence, and I'm kind of enjoying it. Beat the first boss, put about an hour in, so it's good stuff so far. As for watching, I saw the most recent Star Wars release. There was this place called an Alamo Draft House in Omaha, and got to experience that experience as well, which included, you know, people bringing food and drinks to the seats, so that was cool. But that's it for me, Mr. Nice Guy.
Here's what I've always wondered about those places. Do they refill your drink during the movie?
Yes, you just basically have to put up a thing to flag them down and come refill your drink.
Dope, but they're not, like, walking in front of everybody, are they?
No, they try to be discreet about it and, like, kind of crouch down a bit. And there's enough room for them to make those kinds of maneuvers.
That's
so
sweet,
it's
man.
Not so bad. Yeah. It would be worse if the theater had been filled, but we were going there for obviously a movie that had been out for a little while, so no big deal. My brother-in-law was kind enough to, to buy tickets. So we went together, had a lovely evening.
That's fantastic. Well, cool. Let's keep things moving. Now, as far as what I've been watching and playing, still watching the most recent... Actually, not the most recent. I think it's season 5 of Arrow that I'm on at this point, and working my way up to that... what's it called, Mac? The crossover event that's inevitably going to happen within the Arrow universe. My wife and I started watching The Chronicles of Narnia again, the first one, and I forgot that's a decent movie, man. And I thought about you, because I know you once... compared yourself to James McAvoy, and he is in that movie. A young James McAvoy is in Chronicles of Narnia. I did not remember that. Anyway, that's what I've been watching in addition to a bunch of football and basketball and all that good stuff. As far as what I have been playing, now I gotta remember, man. I did dive back into Celeste. I'm trying to get all the strawberries just because it's fun, you know, to go back and play through the hard parts. Still doing a lot of Apex Legends and a few new games on Xbox Game Pass that I just started. But that's it, man. It was a slower week for gaming for me. I did play some Overwatch yesterday on stream on my Twitch channel. But other than that, that's what I've had time for. Now, Mac, we have a lot of people who are enthusiastic in the chat to let us know what they've been playing. One more thing I just remembered, The Good Place. I've been watching that as well. But Mac, do you want to read what the people are into?
Sure. So let's see. As for watching from Okami, we've got That 70s Show. And let's see, Ishmobile's watching Another Life. Let's see. Spenis. As for playing, I'm seeing games like A Bard's Tale, Madden 2020, Jedi Fallen Order, Control, and Dauntless, and Dragon Quest 1, Dragon Quest 11, and Samurai Showdown 2. Nice. Some solid games, some solid things to watch. Oh, and I missed the NFL playoffs.
Gotcha. How'd you miss that, Mac? You skipped it on purpose.
Sports ball.
You straight up skipped it on purpose.
But Ishmobile does say that the old BBC Narnia movies are better. Wink.
See, now I'm not familiar. I'll have to check those out. I don't get how you could play Dragon Quest 1 and Dragon Quest 11 at the same time. But that's just me.
Some of us look beyond the dated graphics, Mr. Nice Guy.
It's not about the graphics. It's not about the graphics. It's about the storyline and them being 10 games apart. Anyway, thank you everyone for tuning in to Two Nerds in a Pod. If you're here live, stick around for the post show where we'll take your questions and just have some fun. We will be back next week here on twitch.tv/twonerdsinapod, 9 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Mountain. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Deuces.
See ya.